Hello and welcome to the HOA Show, where we discuss the news, problems, trends, and critical issues relating to life in a homeowner association. Join us every episode, and together we'll explore how to survive and thrive in the dizzying world of HOAs.
Hello, and welcome to the HOA Show. In this episode, we'll be discussing reserve studies. What are they? Why are they? How do they work? And what do you need to know most about them? I'm your host, Ryan Gazelle, and today we are joined by Robert Nordland and Les Weinberg, as well as Tim Klein. Robert Nordland is the founder and CEO of Association Reserves. He's a registered professional engineer and has been involved in the community association industry since 1982. He holds the Reserve Specialist designation from CAI and is a regular speaker on reserve studies throughout the United States. Les Weinberg is a co-founder of Reserve Studies Incorporated and its CFO. He also holds the Reserve Specialist designation from CAI, as well as an MBA. Ooh, fancy. And he's been serving the CID industry since 1991. Les is also very active in CAI, having served on numerous committees and boards. And Tim Klein is the CEO of Klein Agency Insurance Brokers, which he founded in 1998. But he's been specializing in common interest development since the mid-80s, and he holds a CIRMS designation from CAI. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us today.
Pleasure to be with you.
Absolutely.
All right. Let's dive right in. So first off, Robert, what is a reserve study and why do we need them?
Well, thanks, Ryan. It's a pleasure to be on your show today here with Les to tell your audience and talk about reserve studies, speak about how they help boards run the association in what we call a fiscally responsible and sustainable manner. To answer your question, a reserve study is fundamentally a budget planning tool, and the reserve study helps the board, what we say, anticipate and prepare for the major common area repair and replacement projects at the association. Now, there's no doubt that those major projects are going to happen. The roof is going to fail, the asphalt's going to fail, the paint is going to get dry and crack and fade. So the only question is if the association is going to be prepared to perform that project in a timely manner with funds set aside for that purpose. Generally, the operating fund doesn't have enough cash for those big projects. Now, fortunately, those big projects, the reserve projects, happen on a very predictable basis. And so a reserve study identifies those projects and helps boards prepare. Without a reserve study, boards end up being surprised by major expenses that should not be surprising.
So it's kind of like a savings account.
Kind of like a savings account. Reserve study helps boards know basically what the cost of ongoing deterioration is so they don't get behind. Reserve study helps them identify what's going on. We sometimes say helps them wake up and smell the coffee. The boards fundamentally have that responsibility to maintain the assets of the corporation. That's their job as basically a spokesman for the owners. They have that responsibility to take care of the association. And the reserve study is that tool that helps them anticipate those big projects, which they unfortunately have the least practice working with.
And when does it start, the first reserve study?
Well, actually, the first kind of budget planning document is generally prepared by the developer in different states. It's called a public operating statement. In California, it's the Department of Real Estate that guides that, but basically, it's a series of set-asides. The board sets aside to, on an ongoing basis, prepare for that eventual future project. And the philosophy, the theory is that if you're taking care of the present, if you're setting aside and offsetting ongoing deterioration, the future takes care of itself. Now, then the board, the homeowner board, takes over, and they are responsible for adjusting, tweaking, developing their own annual budgets, and the reserve study is a part of that ongoing care of the finances at the association.
And who requires reserve studies to be done?
That's a good question. Reserve studies pretty much are required just fundamentally because the board is chartered with the responsibility to protect, maintain, and enhance the assets of the association. And it's very hard for the average board member to know what their roof replacement is going to cost, how many years away is it? And so it's just one of those things that is a tool to help the association run smoothly. in about 25 states across the country, there are some types of reserve requirements. So some states get involved in saying what a reserve study looks like, when it needs to be done, what type of reserve study needs to be done, actually when it needs to be delivered. Some of them are prepared for the budget planning process. In some states, they are prepared for prospective buyers. But generally, it boils down to the boards need to know, what do I do now? And a reserve study helps answer that question.
I know here in California, it's required by the California Civil Code, correct?
Right, right. In California, there's civil code that guides most things that go on at a community association. And in California, it's a budget planning process where the civil code says the reserves need to be addressed and updated annually, and that annual update needs to be based on a diligent visual site inspection at least every third year. And then the results need to be delivered to the owners within a certain window in advance of the fiscal year end. And there's a special form that needs to be filled out. But yes, it's guided in California by Davis-Stroniak body of law.
So every year, annually, it has to be updated. And every 3 years, there has to be an on-site inspection, a visual update, correct?
Right. That's the minimum standard. Now, as long as we're talking about different types of reserve studies, let me just make sure your listeners know, there's pretty much three types of reserve studies. There's the full reserve study, where everything is quantified, measured, where you measure your asphalt, measure your roof, measure your carpet, find out what all is there and get that body of information together. That is a full reserve study. After that, the associations alternate between an update with site visit, which is just what it sounds like, and an update no site visit, where the association or their reserve study professional updates the plan based on the time that has elapsed, latest pricing, latest reserve balance, interest and inflation, all those kinds of things.
Okay, and what happens if, say here in California, if an association does not have a reserve study done, if they don't meet that annual update obligation?
I'm a reserve study guy, and I think you probably have a disclaimer that we're not giving legal advice here, but I believe that if it is challenged, if the board moves ahead and prepares a budget without the appropriate financial disclosures, there's a big package that the board is responsible to put together every year. Then a homeowner can challenge that and they can roll the assessments back to the prior year, which is just a major hassle. So it's an administrative issue. I believe there's also a $500 civil penalty. But then again, if homeowner in unit number 13 challenges the new budget in February or March, the biggest hassle is forcing the assessments to roll back to the prior year because the budget wasn't done, quote, correctly.
Gotcha.
Just a couple of things I want to expound on that Robert had mentioned that I wanted to clarify, at least from my experience, that first of all, Robert, you had mentioned the Davis-Stirling Act, and that brought to mind that several of our clients refer to the California Civil Code as the Davis-Stirling Act. The California Civil Code is basically including the Davis-Stirling Act, and they are, for all intents and purposes, one and the same. But we have clients that are somewhat confused, and they'll say, what about this California Civil Code? Well, that is Davis-Stirling, what you're talking about. Just want to make sure that people are aware of that. Second thing I wanted to bring up that you'd mentioned, Robert, is the first action is the developer prepares this, essentially a reserve worksheet. It might be called something different in other states. We have clients as well, I'm sure you do, Robert, that come and say, oh, we had a reserve study then when we bought this place. It was signed by the developer and it was, quote unquote, blessed by the Department of Real Estate. Well, the difference is it is not technically a reserve study what the developer does. The developer is required to submit the initial budget. There is no time factor included. It is just the components as they stand now and their average cost and the life you can expect them to achieve. So it also does not involve a site inspection. So this is based off of plans. This is based on information that is provided by the developer. So it's really important for an association to have an independent reserve study done subsequent to that, and that, of course, can be used as a guideline to start it. but the reserve study done by whoever should include, the first one must include a quote-unquote diligent visual site inspection.
Well, we know, too, that the developer often is motivated to make sure the homeowner's dues are as low as possible in order to sell the units and make them competitive in the particular market that, that the homes are built in. So I can certainly see a reason for them to push those reserve values low so that the going monthly homeowner's dues are competitive. Have you experienced that?
Every time.
Yeah, Les, I was going to add to that. It is common that the professional reserve study recommends significantly higher reserve contributions than were in that original developer's budget. We get blamed for unsettling the budget, but the fact is that the developer budget was very optimistic and often full of a number of holes. And that's just the nature of, Tim, as you said, kind of what was going on. The developer is just going through a checklist, get a budget together, throw it together, and it's often done while the association is a twinkle in their eye, maybe an empty field when that budget is developed. So the association and the professional reserve study provider have a much better opportunity to sharpen their pencil when they can look at real buildings, real asphalt, find out that there's three tennis courts, not two, et cetera, et cetera.
And that kind of brings us, Tim, you mentioned, you know, the developer may have an ulterior motive in terms of keeping the HOA dues low, which brings me to a frustration that I see often about the items that are not included in the reserve studies so often that maybe should be. So, Robert, why don't you speak to what items should be included in the reserve study?
Well, in the field of reserve studies, we're guided by national reserve study preparers, and developers are not subject to that because, again, they are dealing with plans and they're trying to arguably do their level best to point the association in the right direction, give the brand new homeowners an ability to kind of comparison shop, you know, which association fundamentally is going to be more expensive than others. But we in the professional reserve study industry, as Les said, we are preparing reserve studies, not just a budget list. We're guided by national reserve study standards, and there is a four-part test for what projects should appear in the reserve study to be funded through reserves. And that's projects that are the association's common area maintenance responsibility. They are life limited, they have a predictable remaining useful life, and they're above a minimum threshold cost of significance. So they're the major cyclical projects, significant projects at the association, and that's what should be appearing in the reserve study.
So why aren't plumbing and pipe repairs and replacements typically included?
Well, I wouldn't say they're not typically included. They're commonly included. It's sometimes difficult. We, again, in the reserve study business, are not in the guessing business. We build our reserve studies based on reasonable expectations for expenses. That's our job, is to guide the association. Plumbing in some buildings can last 20 years. Plumbing can last 100 years, or better part of 100 years. And so we, and I would imagine Les's team also, we interview the association. We know when it was built. We look and see if it was an apartment conversion. That means it may be another 20 years older than its age as a condo. And we're looking for any clue that we can to identify a reasonable expectation for a potential significant plumbing expense. Because indeed, plumbing passes the four-part test. It is common area maintenance common area maintenance responsibility. We know it's life limited. And I put an asterisk on that. It has a predictable remaining useful life, and it's a significant cost, so it passes test number four. The problem when plumbing doesn't appear in a reserve study is when the useful life is not well established, or when the remaining useful life is not well established. When it's still in a guess type of category, then it doesn't appear in the reserve study.
So I guess what you're saying then, Robert, is that the items that are in that reserve study are going to change as the project gets older, or they should change as the project gets older.
Exactly. Reserve studies, by nature, are perishable documents. They are time dependent. They are made for 1 year. And after a year, then you update them. You renew your estimates. You renew your assumptions. We in the field look forward to getting back to the property and seeing how it's deteriorating, how it's changing over time, and looking for new clues as far as, is the roof deteriorating on schedule, ahead of schedule, behind schedule? What's the material factors? What are the weather factors? What are the demographics of the property? I've had a number of properties where there's a large number of kids there, and the kids can wear things out faster than if it was a age-restricted community. And we had one property that was right next to a school bus stop, and that meant that they had a lot of high school kids hanging around right by the entry of the association every day. And that has a factor also. So there's a number of different factors that are incorporated into the reserve study update. Reserve study update is opportunity to make it better every time. Tune it and revise it. It's like bringing a suit into the tailor. Tweak it because it needs a tweaking.
If I can expound on that too, Robert, I liked your term perishable. Yes, a reserve study has a limited shelf life, and it's only good for the time period that is stated in the reserve study. Now, just to back up a little bit on the plumbing issue, the distribution piping, it in a multifamily complex where the HOA is responsible for the distribution piping, and that's the potable water piping, that is often the largest component in a study. And part of the reason why in the past it hasn't been included is because the common interest developments are, in general, other than conversion, somewhat newer. So we were seeing a lot of building going on probably in the late 70s, early 80s, where the piping was 10, 15 years old when the Davis-Stirling Act came out, and it didn't seem to be necessary to include it. Well, as these properties are aging, now all of a sudden they are in the 30-year time frame, which I believe we'll talk about further down the line, and they should be included. They should be addressed. So the key is, yes, they commonly are included, but the answer, I believe, is it should be included.
Right. Should be included as soon as we can get any reasonable expectation for scope and schedule.
Absolutely.
Tim?
Yeah, I was wondering if you guys could clarify something for me. And that is, a number of years ago, I was shopping for a new home in the South Bay of Los Angeles. And as you know, the South Bay has a lot of 2 and 3 and 4 unit homeowners associations. So on a Sunday, I'm going to an open house and the realtor greets me at the door and is telling me about all the amenities. And one of the amenities she describes for me is that the HOA is inactive. And she thought that was a fabulous...
That's a benefit or a liability?
Yeah, no, she thought it was a benefit. She thought, you don't have to worry about the HOA bugging you. I was like, wait a minute, you're talking to the wrong guy, first off.
Yeah.
But secondly, I wonder if you could clarify for us, is there a cutoff in the Davis-Stirling Act with respects to the reserve study that says, you know, 12 units or less, you don't have to prepare a reserve study?
No, I'm floored here. It feels like another legal question, but no. In California Civil Code, to the best of my knowledge, there is an exclusion for associations that are commercial and an exclusion for associations that have essentially no common areas, where the value of their common areas is less than 50% of the total budget. Basically, where it's a planned community where maybe all they have is an entry monument sign out front. If that's all they have, then they're not subject to reserve planning requirements. But if they're a community association, whether they're 2 units or whatever, we have 2-unit clients. We love those little 2-unit clients.
So do we. We just got one.
I wonder what it's like going to one of those board meetings. Well, Joe, do you want to be president next year?
Tag, you're it.
Hey, Fred, you're late on your assessments again. How's life working with those little 2-unit guys?
The only thing I think is difficult about a 2-unit association is there's no one to break the tie.
That is true. Now, getting back to the replacement and what should be replaced, I have a question. How do you determine the replacement costs? I mean, does it vary by different reserve study companies, or is there a master database that you refer to?
Probably every company has their style or their strategy at association reserves. We are fortunate to have a strong enough client base that we're able to base our major repair and replacement costs on actuals, neighboring associations that have done those projects similarly. So appropriately local associations with appropriately similar projects. So we have a nice active actual database. Beyond that, our firms are known in the industry, and it's professional courtesy to be able to call a roofer and say, hey, we're ABC from Association Reserves, and we're having a little hard time identifying a good number for the roof on XYZ Association. Our job is to point them in the right direction so they'll have enough money to do that project on time. Now, they said, you're the roofer, and we'd love a little bit of help in what are the particular nuances? They're up against a hillside, bad access, the things that might make it a different and difficult pricing estimate. So we reach out to professionals when we are stymied. There are industry trade manuals that are adjusted by zip codes. Les?
I agree wholeheartedly with what you've just said, Robert. We operate the same way. We're going on 30 years as a reserve study provider. Hard to believe. And we have a pretty robust database, and we do take in consideration geographics. What you had indicated, if a place has got very difficult access, is up against a hill, if you've got a roof, for example, that has a lot of cut up pieces, it might not be as large as some properties have, but there's a lot of cut up pieces with HVAC units on them. That's going to have an effect on the roofing price. Whether something is close to the ocean versus inland versus in Arizona, San Fernando Valley, or cooler temps, freezing temps, et cetera.
Yeah,
those are all factors. We take those in consideration. And we also, and I know you do as well, Robert, we take into consideration cost guides as well. And we refer to those to see what they're saying. And these are, you know, the common guidelines. We also look at if we have the benefit of actual replacement costs. So say that building that had the cut-up roofing that was really unique, they had the roof put on 3 years ago. Well, that's extremely helpful. And if associations get proposals from licensed qualified contractors, that's information that we take into consideration as well.
Now, Les, can you speak real quick, and Robert as well, on the new California Civil Code 5551? We just had Chuck Fenton on, an attorney, construction defect attorney, discussing how expensive replacing or inspecting these balconies is going to be.
The quick answer is very.
We saw this law coming, and reserve study providers in the state of California where this law applies gathered together, had a couple of meetings fall of 2019 just to make sure we were all understanding and working together similarly. Les's firm, our firm, were involved in that conversation. And we thought the exterior elevated structures was going to be the big news in 2020. And boy, how wrong we were about that. It affects condos, three units or above, who have elevated exterior surfaces more than human supporting, or 6 feet or more above the ground, wood-based structural element projecting from the building.
So stairs and balconies primarily, right?
Stairs, balconies, landings, decks, things like that.
Walkways.
Walkways. So it's an inspection to make sure that the association is not missing something. And I think it's actually a great inspection because it's only once every 9 years. So in California, that's every third with site visit reserve study. It's meant to coincide with and get that information into the reserve study. The inspection is, as you guys have indicated, it's going to be expensive, but the whole design is it will catch big projects before they get big. The things that are going to come out of that inspection are largely going to be, it's okay, keep painting it, keep putting the deck sealant on it, keep cleaning your drains out twice a year, you know, all those kinds of things. So it will prevent a major deterioration that gets incredibly expensive. So hopefully over the long term, it will pencil out as a cost benefit to the association.
Absolutely.
And that makes perfect sense. I guess my question is, because it's you're not actually replacing something like the purpose of the reserve study, can you place the inspection costs in the reserve study?
Absolutely. And that's one of the things that we spoke about and we agreed it fits the four-part test. Common area
Absolutely.
Responsibility. It's life limited every 9 years. It has a predictable remaining useful life. You can see it count down to the next opportunity, and it's above the minimum threshold cost. And that is the four-part test that we use for everything.
Great.
You were probably going to say this, Robert, but I just wanted to throw in right now that the first inspection must be completed by January 1st, 2025. So it would behoove associations to get that motion probably as early as 2023. 2024, it's going to be kind of a long line to get somebody out there to do this inspection. And you do need a qualified person to do this. Licensed structural engineer or architect, a random statistically significant sample. And then one thing I want to add to people that might be hearing this and saying, oh, one more thing we've got to comply with. Well, this is based on a horrifying incident. Probably a lot of people are aware of it. Maybe many people aren't, but it was, and I don't remember the year, it was a couple of years ago. It was in Berkeley, California, where there were people on a balcony and it collapsed. And I'm not sure if they all died, but there were deaths and serious injuries.
Yeah.
Serious injuries as a result of that. So honestly, anytime I'm on a balcony and a large crowd comes out on it, I tend to go back inside. Mm.
And one follow-up question to this, guys. If an association, because it sounds like obviously the smart move is to put this on your reserve study as soon as possible, how do you go about doing that? Is that something that needs to be voted on by the board? Can you just add it willy-nilly?
Actually, it's part of the annual update process. It's a nice opportunity because the law went into effect in January of 2020. So remember, again, the California three-year cycle. The sweet spot is going to be 2021, 22, and 23. So depending on every association's with site visit update cycle, get the inspection done in time for that. I like Les's strategy of getting it done before 2024, because 2024 is going to be all the late people. So get it done in advance of your with site visit reserve study in 2021, 22, and 23, and even this year. When we are preparing no site visit updates, we're adding a line item for an elevated exterior structure inspection to occur same year that the next with site visit update occurs. So,
and we are just doing the same.
Yeah, it's the natural, normal thing to do. We are trying to give our clients, well, Tim, I think, as you said, as soon as something new comes up, crank it into the reserve study so the association can prepare. So this year, we are including that expense into associations' reserve studies so they can begin preparing for that upcoming expense.
Okay.
And I'd really encourage our listeners to check out the HOA Show podcast with Chuck Fenton. It's really some excellent information. And we talked a lot about how expensive it is. Not because it's not a visual inspection like I would think of a visual inspection. It's actually destructive testing, right? They actually break into the stucco, past the vapor barrier to actually see the condition of the wood inside those various components, the wood components or supporting structures. And it's expensive, very expensive.
Right.
Now, this kind of leads us into the next section, I guess, about how to go about putting a reserve study together. And Les, what's the difference between an RS or a PRA? What are the designations that our listeners should be looking for?
Okay. Well, an RS, it stands for Reserve Specialist. And that is something that the National CAI is in their bailiwick, and you need to meet certain educational requirements, certain experience requirements, and you're required to be recertified every couple of years in order to be deemed an RS. Let me just say as an aside, you are not required to have an RS do your reserve study. However, if you are an RS, you need to disclose that because you will be held to a higher standard. PRA stands for Professional Reserve Analyst, and that is issued by what's called APRA, the Association of Professional Reserve Advisors. It's also a national organization, not affiliated with CAI. And similar standards, I believe there may be some nuances that are different, but similar standards in terms of experience as well as education.
And so the first step for our listeners would be, as far as getting a reserve study, they've just come off the course of construction, the developer turned it over, they hire a reserve study specialist, you're going to go out and do what Robert referred to as a full reserve study, right?
Right.
Correct.
Like I need
Absolutely.
A full reserve study.
You have to.
That's your foundation. And you'll find out that, oh, The developer only anticipated 68,000 square feet of asphalt, but we actually have 78,000 square feet of asphalt. Little things like that. You get it right, it provides a nice foundation for the updates in the years to follow.
And at that point, you are, you know, if you're a brand new community, you are essentially 0% funded or 5%, very low?
Actually, it depends on how much money was seeded by the developer, but sometimes a brand new association is reasonably well funded because when an association is new, their deterioration is rather low, so they can be pretty well funded with not very much money in the reserve fund. So it all depends, but it's a matter of getting them off the line. It's a long race. It's a marathon. So if they get a tough start in the first 10 yards of a one-mile race, that's not a catastrophic problem. So get that full reserve study, start making the right amount of contributions, and they'll be just fine after a couple laps around.
One thing to add to that is an association that is newly built. Yes, they may be seeded with money. They may start collecting early on. The lives of the components should all be close to their typical useful lives, so there won't be that much depreciation. And essentially, your percent funded is a mathematical concept. It's just the ratio of how much money you have in your reserve fund divided by how much you should have. And what you should have is what's been depreciated from installation to the point of the study being done. So both numbers are going to be in the lower side. So you could conceivably is the key word, have an association that is 100% funded from the get-go. Haven't seen it a lot, but I see some that are very high funded because these numbers are small. But, you know, as Robert said too, that it's the further you are away from replacement, you know, if your percent funded is a little bit lower in the beginning, it's a matter of what your plan is, what your reserve study states and how you're following it. You have a better chance of getting that higher up earlier on versus waiting until, you know, a couple of years before the majority of these components come due for replacement.
Yeah, don't wait 3 or 5 or 10 years. That developer's budget is only enough to get you out the gate.
That's it. First year.
Beyond that, the association needs to really look around and get a good basis for how to budget for their association.
Les, about how much of the total budget every year should be going to reserves? Is there an estimate?
I've been asked that. Robert, I know you've been asked that too. Continue to be asked that. And there is nothing required in the civil code. There may be some clauses in certain CCNRs about that.
Just as a guideline.
FHA, I believe, has a minimum guideline. It was 10%. Robert, I don't remember if it still is, but
still 10%.
That was, okay, so it's still 10%, which keyword here is minimum. But it depends. It depends on what your assets are, a common interest development. I live in a common interest development, 300 homes with landscaping and irrigation, and that is it. The streets are public. The streetlights are public. We don't have a lot of components that are being maintained by the association. So that's going to differ from the 300-unit multifamily complex in Playa Vista that's got pools, spas, karaoke rooms, gyms, etc. So just something to keep in mind with respect to that aspect.
We did a study of our clients. We continue to track it, the amount that we are recommending in reserve contributions compared to their total budget. And we've actually found a nice correlation that the typical association needs to be contributing anywhere from 15% to 40% of their total budget towards reserves. And we thought that was going to be different for, as Les said, the high rises versus the planned developments versus mid rises, all those different types of construction styles. But then again, remember that their budgets are correspondingly different. In Les's place, in a planned development with very minimal assets, their budget is small. The last home that I lived, 600 home planned development, all we had was a pool and tennis court and clubhouse divided by 600 people. And the ratio was still the same. We were at, I think, 21%, just because the homeowner assessments were so small. And then you can get to a metropolitan high-rise, and they have a lot of staff, a lot of budget, a lot of major mechanical with the boilers, chillers, elevators, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. The homeowner assessments are much larger, but then again, the reserve contributions are much larger. So it still fits into that wheelhouse of 15 to 40%.
Makes sense.
Less indicated. That's well above the FHA minimum of 10%. If you're aiming for 10%, you're aiming low.
I've heard the term thrown about quite a bit, borrowing from the reserves. Are you allowed to do that if you have an emergency?
Yes. However, there is a very specific procedure that must be followed. And at this point in time, it's really important to be aware of what this entails with our current, you know, concern about possibly more delinquencies. Honestly, I'm not hearing a lot about increases in delinquencies, you know, coming personally to me. They've got to be out there. We're doing a huge amount of reserve studies. And honestly, when the whole shutdown happened with COVID, we were concerned that people were going to say, I don't care what the law says, we're not doing a reserve study this year because we're going to take that money and pay for our gardener, pay for our maintenance of our hallways, whatever it is. That did not turn out to be the case. Fortunately, I'm glad to see, to at least have observed that from my perspective. But there were PPP loans and things like that happening, keeping people afloat, the unemployment insurance, the supplemental unemployment insurance. So there still could be a situation where, oh, gee, we're at the end of all these lifelines, and now people are having hardships paying. So borrowing from reserves, if they are healthy, is definitely a recommendable thing to do if you follow the guidelines. But you just need to know, first of all, it involves intent to consider the transfer, the borrowing in a board meeting notice. So that's your first step. The notice needs to include the reasons of the transfer, options for repayment, and whether a special assessment may be considered, which in practical reality, special assessment is usually going to have to happen. The borrowing can last up to a year before you have to pay it back with certain minor exceptions, and the board can delay it. So just to go through those steps and document it, it really makes a lot of sense. If an association is experiencing temporary financial hardship, if it's a result of keeping their monthly assessments and the reserve contributions artificially low, in my opinion, that is not a valid reason. It's not saying you can't do it, but that's somewhat robbing Peter to pay Paul, as far as I'm concerned. Point being is that you're going to have to pay it back. There is no gift from the government, from anybody. If you borrow from reserves, that is a technique. And if you have available cash, you don't have to go get a loan. You can literally transfer the money with your bank, your financial institution.
Yeah, what Les described was California law. There's different law regulating borrowing in other states.
Right. Okay, and, right. That is all California.
But I want to reinforce the point that Les made. Reserves are designated funds. They're there for specific purposes. They're there to help the association have enough cash so you can replace the roof, paint the building, all those kinds of things. The reserve funds are designated for a specific purpose. It's not a slush fund, not a rainy day fund. And so, again, as Les said, if you borrow from it, the intent is the law is going to force the board to have you reimbursed the reserve fund. The board can't just look at it and say, wow, we have $500,000 in reserves. How come we're having such a hard time paying, as Les said, the landscaper? Well, the whole point is you've got a $750,000 roof project in 3 years. So don't, you know, you got to slap the hand that wants to reach into that.
Absolutely.
So be real careful. Whether it's controlled by state law in any particular state, if you need to borrow from reserves at this time for an emergency, you better have a plan to replace it before it's needed by the reserve fund.
In every industry, we have something called the secret sauce. And I think for you guys, the secret sauce is your ability to predict things.
I like that, Tim. Secret sauce.
I mean, kind of substantial things in my estimation. One, One is that you have to predict the labor costs 15, 20 years out. You have to predict the material costs 15, 20 years out. And you have to predict the bank interest rates, what the Fed's going to be doing with interest rates over that period of time, which is phenomenal to me. I mean, crazy. I mean, we get nervous about predicting how much it's going to cost to replace a condo in the next 12 months, let alone 12 years from now. Can you talk about the secret sauce?
Well, that circles back to what we had originally discussed about reserve studies having a shelf life. They are based on information that we know at a certain point in time when the study is done. The study is going to be valid for 1 year, which is why it is crucial, besides required, to update these studies annually to get more current information. I mean, for example, when we will predict the inflation rate, I mean, this is just something that we do. We take a 10-year CPI moving average. So we drop off the oldest year, add the most current year, and average that. So at least it's got some time value to that, which, again, is the best we've got to predict the current year. There's going to be a whole lot of, you know, psychics that are going to say in 2027, there's going to be some horrific recession, and now we're going to have X, Y, and Z conditions. So, you know, we can't rely on that. We won't rely on that.
Well, I was just going to say the same thing, that we know with, believe, a high degree of certainty what the costs, life expectancies, the remaining useful life, all those factors are now. And we have no expectation to walk away and come back in 20 years and have those projections come true. The nature, I use the word perishable, less said shelf life. We have every expectation we're going to come back and tweak and adjust and tweak and adjust and refine those estimates year after year after year after year after year. So a projection I make about something that may be 20 years into the future, as we update it every year, every other year, whatever it is for that association, we're going to tweak and adjust and refine those estimates. I'm in my office. I got a little crystal ball that I bought off Amazon. It's a little one, a little inch and a half. I think I've shown it to Les. I didn't buy a big one because I don't need a big one. And it's sometimes I'll bring it to a presentation that I make when I used to make them live to show and to make that point that we are not crystal balling into the future. We're making our best estimates today. And as I said earlier, I think if you take care of business today, the future takes care of itself. And so we're gradually refining those things. And Tim, I guess I don't want to disappoint you, but I don't have a big crystal ball to help me make 20-year into the future projections.
Nor do I.
Well, Robert, what you have done is really made it evident why it's so important to have a professional reserve study preparer involved in the process. It's far more complex than I even imagined.
And that kind of sums it up, your term.
And updated regularly.
Right. Take it serious today so you're prepared for tomorrow. As we wrap it up, guys, anything else to add?
One thing I want to add, yes, this is an overlying thing that I try to emphasize when I teach the essentials classes that CAI puts on sporadically, the various chapters. One thing I like to emphasize, and this is helpful for managers, board members, to convey to their homeowners, that what we hear is, why should we as homeowners be paying for somebody else's roof? Because we'll be gone in 10 years, we'll be gone in 20 years, whatever it is. Who cares? Let them pay for it. Well, the concept of the reserve study, besides what we've already discussed, takes into consideration that everybody pays for what they use. Whether or not they physically use it, it's more like what they are allowed to use. And maybe that's not the best way to describe it. For example, the roof. You may live on the first floor of a three-story complex. I think it's kind of a given that everyone knows just because the roof of the building isn't over my unit, we still all pay for it. So whether you live in a complex for 6 months, 6 years, 10 years, 20 years, if you are contributing to the reserve fund, you are paying, or contributing, I should say, the appropriate amount to the reserve fund, you are paying for what you use or what you're entitled to use while you live there. You're not paying for their roof. Okay, the check from the reserve fund will be written maybe after you're gone. But you're basically paying for the roof over your head right now.
That makes sense.
So that's just a concept I wanted to share. I think that it helps people. When I talk about that, I see a lot of the managers in the room, their heads shaking. It's like, you know, eyes rolling. It's like, these people just make me crazy with their requests. And why should I pay? I don't use the pool. Okay. So
yeah,
we all know that story.
And that makes sense because, you know, if I'm buying a home and I see a copy of the reserve study and, you know, the roof has 5 years left on it and there's nothing reserved for it, or it's way underfunded, you know, there's an assessment coming down.
Yeah, you can see assessments coming years in advance. If I can give a kind of a closing thing.
Please do.
I see the benefit of reserve studies, making sure people understand that you prepare a reserve study because the association needs it. The board needs the guidance. You don't do it in any particular state because it's required by state law. The benefit of reserve studies are that the homeowners in that association enjoy lower exposure to special assessments or an absence of special assessments. It's wonderful, as Les said, when you're paying for your fair share, you're not fearing being hit with a special assessment for deterioration that occurred long before you became an owner in the association. And another benefit of having a reserve study is that when you know what projects are coming, you can set the appropriate amount of money aside, and that means your projects get done on time. When projects get done on time, you avoid expensive deferred maintenance. And that's such a way associations shoot themselves in the foot when they try to stretch a project too long, or they don't have the money quite yet, and the paint projects ends up going way over budget because they've got dry rot. Or the roof project goes way over budget because they now have interior unit damage. So having a reserve study that guides the association to be able to do projects on time actually ends up saving the owners money because it helps them avoid that expensive deferred maintenance. And finally, we did a study a few years ago that showed that associations with a strong reserve fund support home values that are a little over 12% higher. And that's because curb appeal is real. And when the reserves are there to maintain the common areas, it is reflected in home prices. Without home buyers being handed a reserve study, the place just looks nicer. And the data supports that. And that rise in home value is far in excess of the size of reserve contributions. And so it's just plain a good investment for homeowners to be taking good care of their common areas with appropriately sized reserve contributions, because the common areas are not disposable assets. They are assets that need to be repaired and replaced. And when you're repairing and replacing them on schedule, the home values support it. And it's just a great way. So minimum special assessments, it minimizes the expenses and it rewards the owners with higher home values.
Tim, anything else to add before we wrap it up?
Great discussion, and makes me want to go and look at my reserve study.
Robert, how can our listeners reach you?
They can reach out to Association Reserves at www.reservestudy.com, reservestudy.com. And they can learn all things Association Reserves, get a proposal, see some resources, etc.
And Les?
And similar for us, you can check our website, www.reservestudies, that's S-T-U-D-I-E-S, plural, inc.com.
So one of you has reservestudy.com and the other has reservestudies.com?
Right, which is why I emphasize studies. We're Reserve Studies, Inc. And a lot of times people email us and it bounces because they didn't put the S on study. So Robert, I believe yours is study singular, correct?
Yes. Reserve study, reservestudy.com.
Okay. And ours is reservestudiesinc.com. So you can check our website, send me a personal email. Happy to respond to anyone that has any more detailed questions.
And we'll put the links to both of these companies on our website, hoashow.org. Thank you both so much for providing your time and your expertise with us today. As we end our episode, we'd like to remind our listeners that if you have any comments, questions, or suggestions for topics you'd like to learn about, you can email us at feedback@hoashow.org. Join us next time on The HOA Show.
To share or subscribe to The HOA Show, visit us at hoashow.org. There, you'll be able to listen to other episodes, find helpful resources relating to HOAs, provide feedback, submit questions, and check out other great stuff. The HOA Show podcast has been made possible by the contributions of Klein Agency Insurance Brokers, leaders in the community association industry. The views and opinions expressed by the podcast, its presenters and guests, do not constitute legal advice. For more information on how the topics in discussion apply to you, please consult with your own legal counsel.